This is Unfortunate History.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to Unfortunate History. This is Cody Pennington, and with me today again is Greg Skinner. What's up, man?
Hi, I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, man.
We're getting a bit of a flow now. I've been on it a few times in a row, so yeah.
That's a good sign. Yeah, we're slowly growing with our downloads. I'm loving that. Every single day we get more downloads. I'm really happy about that. So to you, the listeners, please continue to support the podcast and keep sharing it with all your friends and family and stuff. It really helps us out, and it's completely free to do so. So, but mm-hmm. I love waking up every morning, checking those statistics, and making sure that we're doing the right thing, and people are listening, and people are following us on Spotify and everything, and it's so cool to see that. So yeah, today's episode's a very big episode. This is kind of our first true deep dive into someone from history, and yeah. It's gonna be it kind of hits kind of close to home for me because I'm a Southern boy, although I'm not from the Wild West. But today we'll be discussing Billy the Kid.
Billy the Kid. All right. Every episode where we talk about let's not do accents, I feel like, well, your accent's naturally that anyway, but I'm going to try my hardest at some point in this to get that Southern accent. I'm not going to be able to do it, but I'm going to try.
Well, I was about to say that in a few minutes because I will be playing the part of Billy the Kid during his quotes during this entire episode.
Oh, but I wanted to do it.
I'm going to put on that whole prospectors type accent. Like, there's some gold in them hills.
It's the last thing we said in a couple episodes ago. You generally have that sort of voice preset one American accent.
Yeah.
So it's just... As an Englishman, it's just so run-of-the-mill American.
Yeah.
Even though you are from... See, where are you from again? What is the state again?
I'm actually from Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville, Tennessee.
Born and raised in Nashville, Tennessee, but I have the voice of someone from the dead center of America.
See, when I think Nashville, Tennessee, until I met you, obviously, I think, well, now, how did you... I think very much Southern American.
Well, you'd be right. But,
oh really? You're just the one-off. Is that what
I'm
it
just
is?
An anomaly, I guess. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I just never developed unless I'm drunk or very tired, and then I start using my sirs and ma'ams and all that.
But
stuff.
I've seen you drunk. I've seen you very drunk, and you still didn't do it.
Well, it was more slurred, I suppose. You've seen me offensively drunk. You've seen me drunk enough to fight giant men.
I remember that day in a bar. Squaring up to a very big Australian man, and I got dragged into that.
That's what Americans do, man. That's what we do.
That was your engagement party. Yeah. That could have ended badly.
Yeah, it could have ended badly, just like it did for Billy the Kid.
Just like it did for Billy the Kid. What a segue!
Yeah. Well, the Wild West had no shortage of legends and people on which these legends were based. Mm-hmm. Famous men and women like Wyatt Earp, Doc Holliday, and Annie Oakley have all been interesting and important subjects in American history, all performing seemingly impossible exploits throughout the Wild West of America. There are almost too many Wild West folk heroes to list, but today we'll be discussing one of the most famous and infamous men of that era, Billy the Kid. And Greg, you don't know much about Billy the Kid, right?
I honestly don't know much about Billy the Kid. Much like all our episodes, I come in not knowing much at all. Again, obviously I've heard of Billy the Kid, but I've not done extensive research. So,
Yeah, well, it is a very interesting story and a very interesting life, actually. And one of the main reasons that Billy the Kid is such an interesting outlaw is that he was legitimately a kid for most of his criminal life. Billy was actually an active criminal from the time he was 12 up to his untimely death at the age of 21.
Oh my God, is that how young he was when he died?
He was very young. He was 21 years old.
He was legitimately a kid?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I suppose the times, it was kind of common. People did stuff young, I guess, but...
Not crime.
You might be right there, but
yeah, they were having families and working the farm, but they weren't necessarily shooting men in the face. Well, Billy was known for his ruthless temper and his impressive shooting abilities, and these facts made the Kid one of the most feared criminals in the West up to his death. Now, Billy did an incredible amount of amazing things throughout his short life, and we'll be touching on most of them throughout this series, as this will definitely be a two-parter, or hopefully a two-parter if it has to be a three-parter, maybe, but I'm going to try to fit everything into two parts and to do the story justice enough to actually tell his life story and entertain the listeners at the same time.
If you start hearing us speaking really, really, really fucking fast, just know we're trying to cram it into two episodes.
And we just, I'm looking at the time and just being like, come on, listen to that. Well, as a quick side note, I'm basing most of this research from Sheriff Pat Garrett's book on Billy the Kid. And he would likely be the best one to know about Billy the Kid, since he was the sheriff that hunted the kid down and eventually killed him at 21. Now, this book is actually free to read on the internet, as it's now in the public domain. Mm-hmm. So you can just Google it and search for Pat Garrett's book on Billy the Kid. And the research is also combined with some articles found on history.com and other websites. Like I said earlier, I'll also be playing the part of Billy the Kid in his quotes mm-hmm. with my fantastic Southern impression.
And I'll be doing any other accent that I am allowed to do, which will probably be none. But if I find an accent that's in there, I will try to do it. Are there any Japanese characters, Kodo? I predict
no,
there's not.
We cannot do Japanese impressions.
You didn't let me do it in the last episode. Let me do it in this one.
No. We are going to avoid as many complaints, racial complaints as possible, which is very difficult to do, actually, in a story that's driven quite a lot by people who are racist against Native Americans, because they played a pretty big part in the Wild West.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Even Pat Garrett's book is fairly racist, considering he was a sheriff. He actually referred to a lot of Native Americans as reds and engines, actually spelled as I-N-G-J-U-N.
See, is that like that much of a racial slur? Is it bad? Is that really that bad, calling them red?
Yes. So that is very racist. That's like calling people from, say, like Pakistan Browns. You don't do that. No, it is very racist. It's fairly intolerant.
No, I'm not saying it's not racist, but I'm saying it's like I was expecting kind of a lot worse, because in my head I thought of the slave trade instantly when we bought race.
The racist part of Native Americans comes where they killed like 6,000 of them to get them out of the land.
Yeah, okay. That is kind of bad. That is kind of bad. Yeah. It's very bad, actually.
Yeah. They also called them savages. Yeah, they called them savages, which is pretty racist.
Yeah.
But some of the Native American tribes were very vicious in their attacks.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I know that as a fact. I know some of them were very peaceful, but others were nasty. There's a lot of American military helicopters named after tribes, aren't there?
Actually, that's a good segue, because we'll be discussing quite a bit about the Apaches.
Yeah, that's one of them.
But I think to start out the episode, we're going to go into, obviously, Billy the Kid's early life and then his development into a man mm-hmm. and how he developed into who he became, because he became someone very interesting. But we also want to discuss the points that happened in his youth that brought him to this very vicious, ruthless killer that was actually beloved by so many different people. So it's very fairly interesting.
Well, he honestly barely even got a chance to develop into a man.
You'd say that, but at the end of this episode, you might actually think that he lived a very interesting life and lived more than quite a few adults lived at this point.
I suppose it's that whole story of being truly free, I guess. He lived by his own rules.
Yeah. Well, not much is known of Billy's early life, like really early life, but these facts are what we know. We know that he was born in New York in 1859, and then we also know that in 1862, his family uprooted from New York and migrated to Coffeyville, Kansas. Now, Billy's father passed away soon after the move, so there's actually no real recollection of him because Billy was quite young when he died. After his death, his father's death, Billy's mother, Kathleen, moved them to Colorado, where she married a man named Antrim, who actually was the only one out of the family to outlive the other four members of the family. It was very interesting that the father outlived everyone.
Yeah, literally. Everyone's just dropping down dead. He's like, well, I guess I'll move on then.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, after the marriage, the family moved to Santa Fe, New Mexico. Mm-hmm. Now, around the age of 8, Billy began to show signs of recklessness and anger. He was described as being generous and tender one moment, and then an absolute terror of anger the next. He was so dangerous as a child. And it was also around this time in his life that he became very good at cards. He was a notorious gambler, but he was incredibly skilled at it. Now, the family moved again to Silver City, New Mexico, around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nothing of real consequence occurred here until Billy was about 12, but it was here in Silver City that the kid met Jesse Evans, a slightly older child, but just as daring as Billy. And at this time, he was Billy's friend, but Jesse will actually come back into the story later, quite a bit into his, well, not quite a bit, because obviously he died at 21, but he'll come back into his later life.
I was just going to say, the thing is, you know, it said when he got to the, what was it, ice, where it said he started, I guess he was acting out. Look, that happens to die with kids these days, but they just get diagnosed with, what is it, ADHD or something like that, and then they get put on a load of medication. So I don't think it's uncommon for kids of that age to misbehave.
Well, that's an interesting point, actually, because obviously we said that he was nice and generous and kind one moment, and then the next moment he'd be instantly just angry and dangerous and and causing harm to people. I mean, that's a good point to make with the ADHD, because maybe he did have ADHD. Maybe he was... Maybe that's what was throwing him about with him, or he was just a person that took no shit. But I can imagine that at 8 years old, he might have had some kind of mental issue that definitely wasn't known the moment Pat Garrett wrote his book in the 1800s or the early 1900s.
Well, I kind of guess that when you live in the old American West, you don't really have much choice other than to not take shit.
I suppose so, yeah. And also, the cure for ADHD in those times was just nail one of their feet to the floor so that they can just spin around in circles and not cause anybody any issues.
I've seen some of the ingredients for medicine back then, and literally, like, I think there was cocaine chewing gum and stuff like that, I think. Like,
cocaine, you know, piss and shit. This will get rid of your infection.
Are you feeling sad? Are you feeling overworked? Take this. It has cocaine, piss and shit in it, and it will sort you right out.
That's pretty much what snake oil salesmen used to sell. They normally used to sell piss or actual snake oil, but sometimes they would sell piss.
I feel like back in those days, you could sell anything as long as you had charisma. That's all it took.
Yeah. Now, in his youth, Billy was known to everyone that knew him as actually somewhat of a defender of the helpless.
Mm-hmm.
So the old and frail or the young and defenseless all saw him as a protector, and he was always willing to help them if need be.
Oh, so he was essentially like America's Robin Hood.
Kind of. It was more along the lines of he actually really liked to fight, which we'll get into in a bit, but it's kind of hard to deny that he was generous to people that needed help. I think the best way to describe it, which will come into play in a little bit, is that he hated bullies.
Yeah.
He didn't like bullies whatsoever.
Oh, really?
And anybody that was being bullied by somebody, he would always stand up for them. And that's a pretty interesting point that comes along in some of the stories that mold him into a man that we see in the next few minutes.
You know what? I'm starting to like Billy the Kid more and more the more we talk about him. I am, if I'm honest.
I love him. I love him so much. He's a goofy looking motherfucker. If you looked at his at his photos, he's goofy as hell, but fairly nice guy. And
he's kind of tiny as well, isn't he?
I'll get to that in a bit.
Okay. I do like the fact that it sounds like he sticks up for the, you know, people who have been bullied, but also, I think he just likes to scrap. I think he just likes to fight as well.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, we'll get into all of that in a few minutes.
Okay.
Now, it's believed that his kind and defensive nature of people that were poor, downtrodden, and whatnot actually came from his mother, Kathleen, who was described as a woman of Irish descent whose charity and goodness of heart were proverbial. Like, she was known to be the kindest woman in the world. And Pat Garrett also described her in his book as not a beauty, but what the world calls a fine-looking woman. So she was pretty ugly.
Fine-looking woman. Don't want to be stereotypical, but I suppose he is fully fading into the Irish heritage where he likes a fight.
Yeah, he likes a fight and he loves his mama.
Yeah, that again, fully leading into the Irish stereotype.
Well, Billy's temper, as we kind of described a bit earlier, it was described as fearful. And when he was angry, he was incredibly dangerous, like we said. Now, although he wasn't actually loud or boisterous, he would never threaten, but he would fight any man that he wanted to in Silver City, even at the age of 12. Now, the only problem at this time in his life was that he wouldn't give up in a fight. And anytime he was beaten, he would search for a gun of any kind to use against his assailant. Now, this temper, along with the love of his mother, led to his first act of violence towards another person. Now, one day, while crossing the street with his mother, a man standing nearby made an insulting remark about Kathleen.
Mm-hmm.
Billy instantly punched the man in the face and went to grab a rock to crush his skull. The man ran at Billy, but was smacked to the ground again by a man named Ed Moulton, and Billy was restrained. Now, once Billy was released, he went in search of a rifle that he actually found, and he was going to use it against the man who had made the remark, but he was eventually convinced to return the rifle. However, 3 weeks after this scrap, Ed Moulton was involved in a bar fight. Now, Moulton was actually described as a man who could truly carry himself, and he was actually fighting 2 men at one time. The man who Moulton had knocked to the ground, who was the same person that made the mean remark about Kathleen, mm-hmm. he was a bystander of the fight inside the bar, and he decided to use this as an opportunity for revenge.
Mm-hmm.
He grabbed a chair and rushed Moulton from behind, but before he could reach him, Billy stepped between them and stabbed the man 3 times in the neck and chest, and then sprinted from the bar and disappeared, soon making his way to Arizona, actually fleeing the city, and he would never see his mother's face again, as she died from tuberculosis soon after this occurred.
And that was at the age of 12?
Age of 12, yeah.
Fuck it. And that's the guy who insulted his mum?
Yes.
Jesus Christ. Okay, yeah. I'm not going to lie. If someone had to go at my mum, I'd be annoyed. But I don't think I'd go that far, if I'm totally honest.
I don't know if I'd stab him in the neck or not. I mean, it just seems a bit excessive.
It's kind of excessive. But again, I suppose this is the American West, isn't it? Back then, I suppose, like I say, if you flee that state, they're not going to find you, are they?
No. I mean, well, you could flee a part of the Wild West, which was just a collection of only a few states. You could mm-hmm. flee anywhere in that area and still be gone. Where people would just look for you, but they couldn't find you even within the same area or within the same states. But we'll also get into that in just a little bit.
Were cameras invented at this time?
Not like CCTV.
No, were there 4K cameras and widescreen TVs in this time? I need to know, because I couldn't picture living without it. I'm just saying, because when I think of the old American West, I think of, you know, that wanted poster. There's always a wanted poster in the old American West.
Quite generally, the wanted posters were hand-drawn.
Oh, were they?
So they would have an artist draw a depiction of what the person probably looked like. And I mean, mm-hmm. to be honest, Billy the Kid had a very distinguishable face.
Oh,
so it could have been easy to... you should pull up a photo of him, because it's actually pretty distinguishable. I think there's only 2 actual photos of Billy the Kid available, and they were from his later life, and he is not a good-looking fella.
Okay, I've got the picture. He's... Okay, he's an acquired taste for the women listeners.
he's a badass, though.
Yeah, oh, definitely, definitely. But again, he's no Brad Pitt. I'll give it that.
Yeah. Well, after Billy the Kid's first murder, he fled Silver City. Now, it was around this time that Billy spent time in a boarding house and worked as a ranch hand. And he did that pretty much up until he was about 16 or 17.
Mm-hmm.
When he ended up meeting a companion whose true name was lost to history, or it was claimed that his true name was lost to history because he had changed it so many times. And Billy really only knew him as Alias.
Mm.
But I do believe from my research, I found that this person's name was found to be John R. Mackey. But that doesn't really matter. We'll just know him as Alias.
Alias.
I just wanted to brag about the fact that I had researched that enough. I was like, is his name really Alias? I don't know.
I don't feel like it is, but if you can get the real one, we'll call him Alias for now.
We're going to call him
Alias from down south Tennessee.
I might cut that out.
Just bleep the whole thing. Just bleep it.
Well, Billy and Alias, they traveled together for a bit after stealing some horses and ended up at the Chiricahua Apache Indian Reservation. Mm-hmm. Now here, they met 3 Native Americans and attempted to convince them to hand over a horse and provisions, with them promising to pay later.
Mm-hmm.
But by this time, the Native Americans had obviously become accustomed to the tricks of the white man. So they refused Billy's offer that he would pay a little bit later. Yeah. Now Billy and Alias felt that it was a lost issue trying to convince them, and they just decided to kill the 3 Native Americans, which truly showed the ruthlessness that Billy was capable of from such a young age.
And they pulled it off.
Well, in a quote from Billy describing the incident, a bit vaguely, he didn't actually say that they killed him, but he said, and here comes my Billy the Kid accent.
Okay, bring it on.
It was a groundhog issue. Here were 12 good ponies, 4 or 5 saddles, a good supply of blankets, and 5 pony loads of pelts. Here were 3 bloodthirsty savages reveling in all this luxury and refusing succor to 2 free-born white American citizens, foot sore and hungry. The plunder had to change hands. There was no alternative. And as one live Indian could place 100 United States troops on our trail in 2 hours, and as a dead Indian would be likely to take some other route, our resolves were taken. In 3 minutes, there were 3 good Indians lying around there, careless-like, and with ponies and plunder, we skipped. There was no fight. It was about the softest thing I ever struck.
And that was Matthew McConaughey guesting on our podcast. See you later, Matthew.
All right, all right.
But okay, how old would he have been at this point?
At this point, so, okay, I got to say this now, actually. The dates from Pat Garrett's book conflict with a few different dates from all the other research accounts and that sort of stuff. But at this one, I decided to go with the fact that he was about 16 or 17. Mm-hmm. So he worked as a ranch hand and met up with Alias along the time that he actually became about 16 or 17. And this age is pretty much his age for this entire rest of this episode, is about 16 or 17.
See, when I was 16 or 17, I was literally doing barely anything. I was just sat there. And I was sat there being confused about who I was as a person. It was a different time, wasn't it?
We'll have to just agree that it was a different time, because otherwise we'll just keep saying that. Because yeah, there's a lot more racist things to happen.
I was just wondering, what is the average life expectancy back then in the old American West? I bet it wasn't old.
Well, I mean, there were people that lived up to 70 and that sort of stuff. I would assume it's closer to the 60s, 50s or 60s. But I mean, also, it could have just been 3, or like not even getting out of childbirth, because childbirth is awful. So I don't know.
Literally born and then kicked in the head by a horse. Oh, well, that's that one, guy. We better try again.
Well, Billy and Alias rode off with the 3 Native Americans' things. They ended up actually selling all of their things except for what they needed for cash. And when they returned to the reservation, they were said to have been very well armed and they had money in their pockets. Mm-hmm. And as awful as it sounds, it was described that no one actually regretted the loss of the Native Americans. So their return to the reservation with so much money, it wasn't questioned. However, they soon became bored with the reservation and decided to set off somewhere else with their new horses and things.
So again, it says something about the time, because in that time, the Native Americans were the enemy, weren't they? Like,
they were. Now, the next few bits that we'll discuss about Billy the Kid, I tell to give you, the listeners, some context into what type of person Billy the Kid was developing into. The particular events began to mold the kid into the criminal person people feared and loved. Mm-hmm. We're cutting some of the story, but through a series of events that included raiding homes and other robbings and whatnot, Billy and Alias actually parted ways, and Billy ended up at Fort Bowie in Arizona, still at the age of 17.
What's Fort Bowie? What's that?
It's just a fort. It was just a fort in Arizona.
So part of me thought that he went to prison or something when I hear the word fort, but okay.
No, it was just a fort. Now, it was here during a card game that Billy met a soldier blacksmith, Francis P. Windy Cahill. Now, reportedly, Cahill would bully Billy and refuse to pay him money that he had legitimately won. Now, we said earlier that Billy did not like bullies. Mm-hmm. Well, he would sometimes call Billy a pimp, and that doesn't mean what it means today. I looked it up, and the meaning of this word, it was a slang word that meant close to little.
Oh.
So he was calling him something like a little bitch or a little kid or something like that.
Okay.
Now, one time, Billy actually responded to this by calling him a son of a bitch, which obviously had more oomph back in those days.
Yeah.
This led to a struggle and a fight and a wrestling match, and Billy actually shot Cahill dead. He was then detained and held in a guardhouse, which you thought it was a jail. There was a guardhouse there.
Oh, okay.
And he was detained in it, but he ended up escaping and fleeing Arizona. It really seemed that Billy had an issue with being bullied for his age, which is unfortunate considering he garnered the name The Kid.
Never underestimate the little man.
Never underestimate the little man.
Now, get
again, we'll get to in a few minutes about to his actual appearance at the time and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But stick with us for now. Now, the bullying of Billy the Kid didn't stop there. After fleeing Arizona, Billy arrived in Sonora, Mexico, which is where he fled to after he killed Cahill. Here, he joined up with a Mexican gambler, and I won't say lifetime long friend, but he was a long friend of Billy the Kid's, and his name was Majeles Segura.
Majeles Segura. I've butchered that as much as you.
I think it's Majeles Segura.
I,
you know, I'm just going to call him Segura.
Okay, that's That's better.
We're really teetering on the offensive racial lines here during this episode, so I'll try to be as...
We should just do episodes where there are no names that we can't pronounce because we butcher them every time.
Then it would just be episodes about white people, and we'd be racist for that as well.
We honestly can't win. You know what? Shut the podcast down. We can't win.
I can't do this.
This is Billy the Kid. See you later. Stay unfortunate.
Yeah. Now, still, at the age of 17, Billy soon ran into trouble again due to gambling. He began having issues with a Monte dealer by the name of Don Jose Martinez. Now, for a few weeks, Martinez would persistently bully and insult Billy and consistently refuse to pay him money fairly won at his game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whenever Billy entered the club room, Martinez, like a little bitch, would pull out a six-shooter, lay it on the table beside him, and begin a tirade of abuse towards gringos in general and Billy in particular. Now, eventually, Billy got tired of this, as he always did. Yeah. He and Segura saddled up their horses and packed their belongings, planning to leave Sonora. But before that, Billy needed to stop by the club room. He did so and left Segura outside with the horses. Billy walked into the club room, and the insults began as usual with Martinez while he sat with his hand on his pistol. But Billy interjected and said, "Jose, do you fight as bravely with that pistol as you do with your mouth?" And Martinez raised his gun, but Billy was able to unholster his weapon with incredible speed and shoot Martinez straight through the eye before he was able to shoot him. Now, he and Segura then said sayonara to Sonora and made their escape.
Nice.
Yeah. He hates bullying. He absolutely hates bullying.
I don't dislike the guy. Again, I don't know much about him. I suppose it's much more popular in America. And again, you like him. He's obviously clearly, he's like a folk hero, isn't he?
Well, I didn't know anything about him.
Oh, okay.
I just know the name. And I know that a lot of people in America just know the name as well, but they don't know who he was or what he did. And obviously, this whole episode will be a lot of really crazy moments, but we don't even get to some of the other stuff until the next episode. So, I mean, there's a life full of just crazy moments from this guy that most people don't know. They just know his name because he's so famous.
In only 21 years as well. He's crammed all that into 21 years.
Yeah, this whole episode is pretty much when he was 17.
That is madness.
Well, Billy and Segura soon found themselves in the city of Chihuahua.
Chihuahua.
Yeah. At one point, Billy, again, had won a sizable amount of money on a card game. But the dealer told Billy, in a rather sneering tone, that he didn't have enough money to pay his losses. Although the dealer was at the exact same time as saying this, raking doubloons and double doubloons into his sack, which would have been enough to pay Billy a dozen times over, all the while making eye contact with Billy. Just imagine him going, "Sorry, I don't have enough money for this." And he's just raking the money into it. But Billy actually didn't reply to him. He just smiled very slightly, and he and Segura left the house. But that particular dealer never made it home with his gold. And one could assume it found its way into someone else's pockets. And not so coincidentally, Billy and Segura were never seen again publicly in Chihuahua, but a few more prosperous card dealers were mysteriously held up at night before they could reach home.
I'm kind of glad. I'm kind of rooting for him as well. I'm on their side.
Well, he's an outlaw, but everybody else seems to be an outlaw as well.
Yeah, everyone's an outlaw. Yeah. Everyone's ripping someone off. You know what? Billy, go on, Billy.
I agree. Well, the two finally kind of got tired of Chihuahua, so Billy and Segura made their way to Rio Grande City, Texas, which was on the Rio Grande River. Now, Billy was still at the age of 17, and it was here that the two actually ended up parting ways for a little bit, but Billy ran into an old friend from his past, Jesse Evans, who I mentioned earlier, and said he would come back into play.
Yeah.
Now, before we continue the story of what Billy and Jesse got up to, this is a good point to describe Billy physically. He was pretty much at the same physical stature now as he was when he was killed. Now, Billy was 5'7" and 1/2 inches tall. And I feel like they really needed to get that 1/2 inches in there.
You know what? Okay, he's not as short as I thought he was then.
Well, 5'7", 1/2 inches is still relatively
back
short.
Then,
but it's not. I guess back then, it was relative. Especially when people, I guess, yeah, back then it was all right. He was also 135 pounds. But then,
so he's small and slight as well.
Well, but
so
then you're also thinking back then people didn't have a lot of food to eat. So there were lot of people were quite skinny back then. So, and that's actually very funny. That's a very funny point to make, is that I watched a lot of documentaries as well. And a lot of these documentaries, the cheap ones, always have this super fat cowboy outlaw man who is just walking. He's walking down walking through the middle of the street, and he's just, his belly is gigantic, and then he's shot in the back and slowly just tumbles down with his rolls. It's just every single time. There's always some fat cowboy who thinks that he would fit in these times, but literally they were so small. And even still, though, he was described as taller and bigger than Jesse at the time. So he was actually the bigger of the two.
Oh, really? Was he?
Yeah.
I always thought Billy the Kid, I thought he was smaller than that. Because I'm sure probably 5'7" back then, that's got to be average height.
I think it was average height. Yeah. And I think that was even the height. I think Napoleon was 5'7". So I don't even.
That's what I was echoing. Yeah. Napoleon was 5'8". Napoleon wasn't half as small as everyone made out him to be.
It was a misconception. Yeah. No, he wasn't.
Yeah, yeah.
But something interesting about Billy's appearance is that he never actually had a scowl on his face or anything of the sort. Some people did describe him as having a cruel expression on his face, but that is actually completely false. More likely than not, Billy would actually always be smiling or laughing. Now, this may sound like a good thing, and it may sound kind of interesting, but this wasn't only when he was happy or when he was having a good time.
Yeah.
Yes, Billy would laugh and smile when he ate or when he drank, but also when he fought and even when he killed, which can very easily be considered quite unsettling. And he would rarely show any signs of anger, like we mentioned earlier, with the Monty dealer that tried to screw him over. He just gave a slight smile. He would just merely pull his lip into a small smile and would more than likely murder the object of his aggression with no second thought. Still, all at the age of 17. But it's also stated in Pat Garrett's book, very clearly, actually. And Pat Garrett, the guy that actually killed Billy the Kid, pushes this fact very hard throughout this book. He states that Billy's generosity knew no bounds whatsoever, no matter who you were, either a friend, stranger, and even an enemy. You were welcome to Billy's money, horse, clothes, or whatever else he had him on at the time. It was almost like if you didn't trouble him, he wouldn't really trouble you. And to me, somewhat, this kind of sounds very close to bipolar disorder or, like you said, ADHD. But obviously, we can't really know for sure. But it's a really interesting fact that he was very dangerous, but also incredibly generous. But you can't take away, the generosity doesn't take away the danger he posed to other people, though. So it's you got to remember that if he were upset in the wrong way, he could kill somebody at the drop of a hat. So his generosity is incredible to mention, and it's also very pushed, like I said, by Pat Garrett. But still, it's also very interesting to know that he could instantly kill somebody even after giving them the shirt off his back.
That's what I'm saying. It's like he makes a strange. Oh yeah, you can have my food. I'll ride my horse if you want. And do you need some money? Yeah. Then stab. And
it's like, more like, oh yeah, you can have some food. Do you need my horse? Oh, here's some clothes. And then if the guy says, yeah, but you can't grow a beard, then he's fucking. He just, you know what I mean? Just stab, cuts his head off.
You're not 5'7" and a half. You're just 5'7", and he's like, no,
you son of a bitch.
I measured myself yesterday, you son of a bitch. Stab.
Well, like we said, Billy met up with Jesse Evans. Now, Billy and Jesse truly found their place in crime for the first few months that they were together after being reunited. They completed hundreds of lawless raids, and subsequently each gained a bigger name for themselves. There were a number of bounties placed on each of their heads, but these bounties only ever ended up with dead bounty hunters. Billy and Jesse were too talented with their weapons and too fearless to be taken down by any bounty hunter. Now, Billy and Jesse, like we said, made their home for the meantime around the Rio Grande area. Now, throughout the same area around the Rio Grande, a group of Native Americans referred to as the Mescalero Apache Indians would make frequent raids into Mexico and actually attack immigrants along the river. Now, on one occasion, an immigrant group from Texas containing three men and their families came across Billy and Jesse. The immigrants took pity on these two poor, unsophisticated boys and felt terribly sorry for their situation, having to travel through Indian country all alone and unprotected, and they proposed to Billy and Jesse that they should travel with them for safety. Now, the two boys actually declined. They ate dinner with the group, but then the wagon train just rolled on. Now, later that same day, the boys noticed a group of Native Americans seemingly traveling in the same direction as that wagon train. And the boys decided to try to cut the Native Americans' trail to catch up to them and get a better look at them. And they succeeded.
Okay.
They caught up to the Apache party and found that there were 14 warriors, and they were obviously heading in the direction of the immigrants' train. And they were obviously, at this point, going to attack the immigrants' wagon train. So Billy and Jesse decided to intervene. They would need to ride much harder and through much rougher terrain to surpass the Native Americans and reach the immigrants first. Jesse was a bit less confident about the trip and asked Billy if they'd actually be able to make it. And Billy responded, "The question isn't, will we make it, Jess, but how soon will we make it? It's a groundhog case. We got to get there. Think of those white-haired youngins, Jess, and whoop up. When my horse's four legs let up, I got two of my own." Which is a badass thing for a 17-year-old to say.
I even listened to you, and I was like, yeah, that's sick, that bad man.
And they rolled the fuck on. They actually took the hell off and went on this trip to cut through the Apaches' trail. Now, just at dusk, the boys actually rounded a corner to find the immigrants' camp. And they had arrived literally seconds before the Apaches, as they instantly heard the battle cry of the 14 warriors.
Yeah.
And Billy and Jesse jumped from their saddles. They grabbed their rifles, and they responded with their own terrifying battle cry, which surprised the shit out of the Apaches. It completely caught them off guard, and it gave Billy and Jesse time to start picking them off one by one. As they were both expert marksmen, it only took one shot per each Apache to bring them down. The boys made their way to a trench for a better vantage point, but on the way, Billy's rifle was caught by an Apache bullet, and the wood splintered and caused an injury to Billy's hand. He then instead returned fire with his revolver until he made it into the trench. Now, from this spot, the boys actually couldn't see what was happening inside the camp, but they heard a child scream as if she were in agony, as well as the shriek of a woman. So Billy jumped from the trench and charged the camp with his revolver and a Spanish dagger. And it's stated in Pat Garrett's book that Billy fought through half a dozen of the Apache, howling with delight with his signature smile on his face. And after he had emptied his revolver, he dodged a blow from one of the attackers by darting under one of the wagons. Luckily, Billy fell directly next to a prairie axe. He came out the other side of the wagon and found all but two of the immigrants were hiding there. The young girl and woman who had both screamed earlier could be seen on the ground nearby, seemingly lifeless. Well, Billy took the axe he had found and charged at the Apaches. With the help of Jesse's cover fire, he swung on the Apaches for a full 3 minutes until none were left alive. And Billy's face, hands, clothing, the wagons, the camp furniture, and the grass were all said to be splattered with blood and brains.
Who the fuck was this guy? Who is Billy the Kid? I didn't know he was this badass.
He's absolutely insane.
I did not know he was this badass.
Yeah, but the boys discovered after the attack that the little girl had received a skull fracture from one of the Apache attempting to crush her skull, and the mother had fainted due to this.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone seemed to have suffered some sort of loss or wound from the battle.
Yeah.
All three of the men from the wagon train were somehow wounded. One of them was shot in the stomach.
Okay.
Billy had the heel of his boot broken, his gun was shot to pieces, and he had received a wound to the hand. And Jesse lost his hat.
I fell for him.
He said he remembered when it was shot off, but he didn't know where it could be.
Back when hats were that important.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? If I lost my hat now, I'd be like, okay, my hat's gone. Back then, it was a big deal.
Well, back then, if you didn't have it, you ended up getting sunstroke from all the fucking sun, so you'd end up passing out and dying from dehydration.
God damn, everything would kill you in America.
Everything would kill you, yeah. Well, after the situation with the immigrants, Billy and Jesse returned to the Rio Grande area, where they fell in with a group that Jesse knew actually very well.
Mm-hmm.
They were offered a job as a group of cowboys, and they both agreed. But Billy received word that his old friend Segura was in the area. So he decided to wait for him, and he decided to catch up with the others in Lincoln County later, which would come in the second episode. Now, Billy awaited Segura's arrival for quite some time until he received word from a writer that Segura had actually been imprisoned in Mexico.
Okay.
And the jail was 81 miles away from Billy, but he made the journey within 6 hours. Obviously, not as impressive as today, but it's pretty impressive with the horse.
That's crazy impressive of a horse. How do you...
Well, especially considering the fact that he had to cross the Rio Grande River on horseback, which actually took a full 30 minutes of constant fighting with the waves and he was still 17.
I keep forgetting that fact that he is 17 as well.
That's why I keep saying it, because people are going to forget that he is so young.
Because I do keep forgetting he's 17. That is not...
He's over a decade younger than I am.
He's literally exactly a decade younger than I am.
Now, once at the prison, because he did successfully get to the prison within 6 hours, like we said, Billy tricked the guard at the entrance by using his impeccable Spanish. He was really good at speaking Spanish, and nobody could tell whether he was American or not. So he was incredibly good at speaking Spanish, and he said... Turn out, we got two American prisoners here, but obviously in Spanish. The guard opened the door and was met with Billy's pistol. He unarmed the guard and told him to lead him through the jail to Segura. Once they reached the jailer, he was also convinced to disarm and told to release Segura. The men did as they were told, and they were both fastened to a post, gagged, and locked inside the prison. The key to the prison and the guard's weapons were thrown on top of the jail as the two left the jail, and the two bandits made their escape. All of this happened within the time it took me to say it. This was a ton of trouble to go through for a friend. And Greg, I don't know if I'd do it for you.
Honestly, it's time to you, mate. If you're in prison, I'm like, you know what, he's in prison. He probably deserves it. See you later.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure they weren't lovers, if I'm honest. Well, Billy Kidd and Segura both received word from Jesse Evans to meet them in Rio Pecos. Now, Jesse stressed to Billy and Segura to not go through the ordinary, more practical route through the Guadalupe Mountains. It was apparently full of Apaches who were never happy when someone entered their domain and would attack any trespassers on site. Now, something about Billy, as you may have already figured out from the information, he completely despised Native Americans. He was very racist against Native Americans. Also, the call of adventure was a bit too much for Billy. So he decided that he wanted to brave the Guadalupe Mountains, and Segura refused to accompany him and tried to convince Billy to come with him down the safer path, but it was no use, so the two actually parted ways for the final time.
He should have just reverse psychologied him and gone, no, that way is totally boring, there's nothing down there, there's no Apaches whatsoever, and he would have gone, I want to go the other way, because honestly, it sounds like he just loves a fight, don't know.
He loves a fight, he loves the adventure and everything. I mean, he lived... the fullest life a 21-year-old had ever lived.
As for 21 years old, like you say, yeah, he did live a very, very full life. Yeah.
Well, now Billy needed another companion to brave the mountains with. He met another boy of the same age named Tom O'Keefe, and both decided to make the journey together. They gathered supplies and saddled up a sturdy mule and set off on the near 200-mile journey through the mountains. This is like they decided to go through the mines of Moria.
Literally, that is far.
They decided to go through so much terrain that was dangerous to just climb in general, but also the fact that you could get attacked at any moment by Apaches that were not accepting of outsiders made it incredibly dangerous.
Was he just an adrenaline junkie? Was he the original adrenaline junkie?
I think he just didn't care. He was just like, he didn't like bullies. I think he liked being more than he was.
Yeah.
More than the kid.
Again, like I said, I would mention the fact that it's almost like small man syndrome, but he wasn't that small for the time.
Maybe he just wanted to live the fullest life he possibly could.
I guess so, but I think everyone wants to live the fullest life that they can, but even now, if there was a past that was full of Native Americans that wanted to kill me, I'm not taking that route. You know what I mean? I'm putting in the sat-nav, find alternative route.
Well, the next part kind of explains his thinking on it, because they were running out of water and they really needed water.
Okay.
And on the second night in the mountains, they found an Apache trail that evidently would lead to water. So they decided to track the Native Americans in hopes of getting some themselves. Mm-hmm. And Billy described it saying, I would rather die in combat than die from thirst. They initially decided to keep a safe distance from the trail, although Billy did state that he was more than happy to fight for the water if need be. Now, the path led them to a rock face and to a small entrance into the mountain. And Billy decided to enter the pass, but told Tom to wait outside with the horses. And should Billy return running and screaming, then Tom should guide the horses to the trail so that they may be mounted quickly and completely leave the mule.
I just had a vision of him running out like, aah! Just going like as he's chased by about 200 Apache soldiers. But again, it does have that sort of, that is an impressive mentality to have. Again, it's almost like with our last episode with the the Japanese's mentality. Again, they'd rather die in combat than, you know, it's like an honorable death, I suppose, but...
I suppose so, yeah. Well, Billy decided to slowly travel through the path, and he came out into a clearing completely surrounded by rocks, which contained grass and weeds, as well as a bubbling mountain spring. It was like a hidden oasis inside the mountains.
Oh, really?
And Billy slowly approached the spring with his back against the rock walls and noticed that the ground of the spring was actually wet, meaning that the Apaches had been there just recently. The kid dunked his head into the spring and filled his canteen. He slowly began to exit the clearing, but suddenly there were numerous gunshots and Apache battle cries from all directions. With the echoes and whatnot, he couldn't actually tell exactly where they were coming from. But Billy let out his own battle cry, grabbed his revolver, and returned fire while he quickly sprinted back through the entrance he had come through.
Literally what I was just saying, running full pelt, blasting anywhere he can.
Now, on the outside of the entrance, Tom had actually heard the noises from inside the pass, and he readied the horses as he was told. But his fear came over him, and he actually fled down the mountain pass without Billy.
Oh, really?
He found a cleft in the rocks that would not fit his horse, so he dismounted and gave the horse a slap, and he crawled through the chasm on his hands and knees. He climbed up higher and higher and higher, basically, until he reached a high plateau that he believed was the summit of the mountains. And he pulled himself to his feet. Exhausted from the climb, he was about to pass out until he saw something on an adjacent peak making its way up the nearly completely flat mountainside. It was Billy.
You didn't have to tell me that. I had a vision it would be Billy. Yeah.
Who had used the mountainside as his escape from the Apaches. Unable to control himself, Tom sank back down onto the rock and fell into a deep sleep. And the kid had run from the entrance while being chased by a group of 20 Apaches. He had completely ignored his horse and decided to climb the mountain. Now, when the Apaches reached the opening, they had lost sight of Billy. They found his trail, which led them to a seemingly inaccessible cliff. But above them, randomly, they saw Billy jump out to a part of the cliff to pull himself back up. And they immediately opened fire, but they ended up missing. So multiple Apaches began to climb towards the kid. One was said to have panther-like climbing abilities, and he climbed so quickly that he reached Billy's concealing ledge. And there was a fight between that Apache and Billy, and the Billy actually shot the Apache, causing him to fall, ricocheting off the cliffs while he fell down, and then he landed on the ground completely broken. And the Apache continued their pursuit while Billy gave up on his concealment to further his climb. He basically said, I'm not going to stay here, I'm just going to keep climbing and do as best I can. And he began to pull ahead in his ascent as he reached parts of the mountain even the Apache wouldn't risk climbing to, although they did keep firing at him nonetheless. Every few moments, Billy would stop to catch his breath and would curse the Apache and return fire, causing even more barrages of bullets to be sent his way. However, not one bullet hit him, although one bullet did knock a fragment of rock loose, which smashed directly into him, severely injuring his face.
Okay.
He continued his climb, sometimes actually leaping through the air to grab a hold of the next cliff ledge. And the climb was such a dangerous and terrifying experience, the kid later said that the nearest he ever came to having a nightmare was trying to repeat the same climb in his dreams. And finally, he reached the peak, and he knew that the Apaches had broken off pursuit far below, and it would take them days to detour around to actually intercept him. Just like O'Keefe had done, the kid succumbed to his exhaustion and passed out, leaving the two companions separated and completely alone. And that's where we'll pick up next week on our story of the life of Billy the Kid.
Billy the Kid is a badass. I didn't know he was this cool, man. I just thought he was a cowboy. I didn't know he fucking scaled cliff faces to escape Apaches all while going, fuck off. What? You know what I mean? Like, I know he's not British, but in my head, he's like me. British, just fuck off, you bastards. I've learned a lot today, and I've got a lot of respect for Billy the Kid. This was 17 as well.
He was 17, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously the dates are mixed about, but he was at least 17 or 18 around this time throughout basically this whole first episode.
I was such a scared little boy at 17. I didn't know what life was. I didn't know any of this. And then you got Billy the Kid climbing, like we just said, climbing mountainsides while getting shot at, while cursing them.
I mean, obviously you could say it was because of necessity, but even still, it was pretty ballsy to do it. It was absolutely incredible that he would even risk it.
You know, that's one thing I've noticed about our podcast we've done so far. All the people we've covered typically must have huge gonads. That's what I've noticed.
You know what? That's actually a problem for me because we haven't discussed any amazing women. So we have to touch on some women.
They can still have theoretical huge gonads. They can still have.
That's true. That true. We are. I promise, listeners, we will discuss women in the future with enormous hypothetical testicles.
We're saving them. We're saving those episodes because they're hypothetical. If there's one thing I know, that it's women's hypothetical testicles are much bigger than blokes' actual testicles. Trust me.
Absolutely. Next week, we'll be discussing the kid's involvement with the Lincoln County War, his further criminal exploits, and his eventual murder. Hopefully we get to that.
But
please tune in next week for the conclusion.
Even if it takes 3 episodes, this is such an interesting story that I feel like if it takes three episodes. We'll try and get into, but nevertheless, he's such an interesting character. I've learned a lot just today, honestly.
That's cool. I'm happy.
I didn't know he was this badass, honestly. I didn't know that.
He's a cool kid, man.
Literally a kid as well. He's a child, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's a teenager, should I say.
Well, cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And I hope you listeners have enjoyed it. And if you'd like to follow the show on social media and that kind of stuff, you can follow us on Twitter because I'm using Twitter so much more now. It's actually a lot more fun than I originally thought.
I've never used Twitter myself, but I love the game.
It's actually a bit more fun than I expected.
Is it fun? Is it good?
Yeah, well, I really like interacting with the fans. So fans, if you want to follow us on Twitter at UnHistoryPod, please do and interact with me. Tell us what you want to hear as well because we have... Literally, we have so many episodes per month to do that we would love to. I mean, even if what you want to hear is not a huge thing, we could throw it in a minisode or something like that. You know, I mean, obviously, we save some of the really cool, interesting, big, juicy stories for the main episodes, but we have so many minisodes that we got to fill in. We have a ton of topics, but I'd love to cover some that the listeners want to hear. You know, but if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's UnHistoryPod or at Unhistory Pod. And if you want to follow us on Facebook and Instagram, it's at Unfortunate History. And if you want to follow me, it's just Google Cody Pennington and follow me anywhere. And Greg, do you want to shout anything out?
And again, if you just want to follow me, just follow me on Facebook at Greg Skinner. And I still haven't changed my Instagram name. It's still GSkin93.
GSkin93.
I should change that. But it costs nothing to share us or give us a listen.
Yes, please do.
And if you like what you hear, please subscribe, please tell your friends. And like I say, I really hope that you like what you're hearing because I'm enjoying doing it.
I'm enjoying it as well. Yeah. I mean, honestly, and if you are enjoying what you're hearing and you're listening on an Apple device, please, if you could give us a review on iTunes, that would be fantastic. Please do that. And if you want to follow us on Spotify, please do that. Every bit of it helps us push further. I mean, like I said, every day we're getting more and more listens, and it just makes me want to work even more on the podcast. Yeah. And it is a lot of work. You know, we're doing a lot of work here, so we want to know that we're doing it for a reason.
Cody says we do a lot of work. He means he does a lot of work. I literally, if you saw the comparison of work that I do compared to what he does, it's income. It's not really fair. But yeah, that's what I'm saying. We do put a lot into this podcast, specifically Cody. So again, it means that if you like it and you're listening, it means a lot.
It does mean a lot. So please, again, share the podcast. Tell everybody you know, or at least people that you know would enjoy it and that sort of stuff. But I guess, unfortunately, we got to go until next week with the next episode of Billy... Well, until our next minisode between now and the completion of our Billy the Kid episodes. But unfortunately, we got to go. Until then, stay unfortunate.
Stay unfortunate, guys. Ta-ra.
See ya. Bye.